She's just a girl, Jocelyn panted. My child, my daughter.
Sebastian's hand shot out and gripped Jocelyn's jaw, half lifting her off the floor.
I was your child, he said. Lilith gave me a realm. You gave me your curse. You are no kind of mother, and you will stay away from my sister. You are alive on her sufferance. You all are. Do you understand?
He let go of Jocelyn. She staggered back, the bloody print of his hand marked on her face.
Luke caught her. You are all alive because Clarissa wants you alive. There is no other reason.
You told her you wouldn't kill us if she ascended that throne, Jace said, unclasping the silver bracelet from around his wrist.
His voice was without inflection. He hadn't met Clary's eyes.
Didn't you?
Not exactly, said Sebastian. I offered her something much more substantial than that.
The world, Magnus said. He appeared to be upright through sheer force of will. His voice sounded like gravel tearing his throat.
You're sealing the borders between our world and this one, aren't you? That's what this rune circle is for, not just protection. So you could work your spell. That's what you've been doing. If you close the gateway, you are no longer splitting your powers between two worlds. All your force will be concentrated here. With all your power concentrated in this dimension, you will be well nigh invincible here.
If he seals the borders, how will he get back to our world?
Isabel demanded. She had risen to her feet. Her whip gleamed on her wrist, but she made no move to use it.
He won't, said Magnus. None of us will. The gates between the worlds will close forever, and we will be trapped here.
Trapped,
Sebastian mused. Such an ugly word. You'll be guests. He grinned. Trapped guests.
That's what you offered her, Magnus said, raising his eyes to Clary. You told her if she would agree to rule beside you here, you would close the borders and leave our world in peace.
Rule in Edom. Save the world. Right?
You're very perceptive, Sebastian said after a brief pause. It's annoying.
Clary, no!
Jocelyn cried. Luke tugged her back, but she was paying attention to nothing but her daughter.
Don't do this!
I have to,
Clary said, speaking for the first time. Her voice caught and carried incredibly loud in the stone room. Suddenly everyone was looking at her. Everyone but Jace. He was staring down at the bracelet held between his fingers.
She straightened.
I have to, don't you understand? If I don't, he'll kill everyone in our world. Destroy everything. Millions, billions of people. He'll turn our world to this.
She gestured toward the window that looked out onto the burned plains of Edom.
It's worth it, it has to be. I'll learn to love him. He won't hurt me. I believe it.
You think you can change him? Temper him, make him better?
Because you're the only thing he cares about,
Jocelyn said.
I know Morgenstern men. It doesn't work. You'll regret...
You never held the life of a whole world in your hand, Mom, said Clary, with infinite tenderness and infinite sorrow.
There's only so much advice you can give me.
She looked at Sebastian.
I choose what he chooses. The gift he gave me. I accept it.
She saw Jace swallow. He dropped the bracelet into Sebastian's open palm.
Clary is yours, he said, and stepped back.
Sebastian snapped his fingers.
You heard her, he said.
All of you.
Kneel to your queen.
No, Clary thought, but she forced herself into stillness, silence.
She watched as the Andarkin began to kneel, one by one, their heads bowed. The last to kneel was Amatis, and she did not bow her head. Luke was staring at his sister, his face flayed open. It was the first time he had seen her like this, Clary realized, though he had been told of it. Amatis turned and looked over her shoulder at the Shadow Hunters. Her gaze caught on her brother's for just a moment, her lip curled. It was a vicious look.
"Do it," she said. "Kneel, or I will kill you."
Magnus knelt first. Clary would never have guessed that. Magnus was so proud, but then it was a pride that transcended the emptiness of gestures. She doubted it would shame him to kneel when it meant nothing to him. He went down on his knees, gracefully, and Alec followed him down. Then Isabel, then Simon, then Luke, drawing Clary's mother down beside him. And lastly Jace, his blonde head bowed, went to his knees, and Clary heard the window behind her shatter into pieces. It sounded like her breaking heart. Glass rained down. Behind it was bare stone. There was no longer any window that led to Alicante.
"It is done. The paths between the worlds are closed."
Sebastian wasn't smiling, but he looked incandescent, as if he were blazing. The circle of runes on the floor was shimmering with blue fire. He ran toward the platform, took the steps two at a time, and reached up to catch Clary's hands. She let him draw her down from the throne until she stood in front of him. He was still holding her. His hands felt like bracelets of fire around her wrists.
"You accept it," he said. "You accept your choice."
"I accept it," she said, forcing herself to look at him with absolute directness.
"I do." "Then kiss me," he said. "Kiss me like you love me."
Her stomach tightened. She had been expecting this, but it was like expecting a blow to the face. Nothing could prepare you. Her face searched his. In some other world, some other time, some other brother was smiling across the grass at her, eyes as green as springtime. She tried to smile.
"In front of everyone, I don't think..."
"We'll have to show them," he said. And his face was as immovable as an angel pronouncing a sentencing.
"That we are unified. Prove yourself, Clarissa."
She leaned toward him. He shivered.
"Please," she said.
"Put your arms around me." She caught a flash of something in his eyes. Vulnerability. Surprise at being asked. Before his arms came up around her. He drew her close. She laid one hand on his shoulder. Her other hand slid to her waist where Heosphoros rested with its scabbard tucked into the belt of her gear. Her fingers curled around the back of his neck. His eyes were wide. She could see his heartbeat pulsing in his throat.
"Now, Clary," he said. And she leaned up, touching her lips to his face.
She felt him shudder against her as she whispered, her lips moving against his cheek.
"Hail, Master," she said,
and saw his eyes widen just as she pulled Heosphoros free and brought it up in a bright arc, the blade slamming through his ribcage, the tip positioned to pierce his heart. Sebastian gasped and spasmed in her arms. He staggered back, the hilt of the blade protruding from his chest. His eyes were wide, and for a moment she saw the shock of betrayal in them. Shock and pain. And it actually hurt. It hurt somewhere deep down in a place she thought she had buried long ago, a place that mourned the brother he might have been.
"Clary!"
he gasped, starting to straighten. And now the look of betrayal in his eyes was fading, and she saw the beginning spark of rage. It hadn't worked, she thought in terror. It hadn't worked. And even if the borders between the worlds were sealed now, he would take it out on her. On her friends, her family. On Jace.
"You know better," he said,
reaching down to grasp the hilt of the sword in his hand.
"I can't be hurt. Not by any weapon under heaven."
He gasped and broke off. His hands had closed around the hilt, just above the wound in his chest. There was no blood, but there was a flash of red, a spark. Fire. The wound was beginning to burn.
"What is this?"
he demanded through clenched teeth.
"And I will give him the Morning Star," Clary said.
"It's not a weapon that was made under heaven. It is heaven's fire. With a scream, he pulled the sword free. He gave the hilt with its hammered pattern of stars one incredulous look before he blazed up like a seraph blade. Clary staggered back, tripped over the edge of the steps to the throne, and threw one arm partly over her face. He was burning, burning like the pillar of fire that went before the Israelites. She could still see Sebastian within the flames, but they were around him, consuming him in their white light, turning him to an outline of dark char within a flame so bright it seared her eyes. Clary looked away, burying her face in her arm. Her mind raced back through that night when she had come to Jace through the flames, and kissed him, and told him to trust her. And he had, even when she had knelt down in front of him and driven the point of Heosphoros into the ground. All around it she had drawn the same rune over and over with her steely, the rune she had once seen, it felt like so long ago now, on a rooftop in Manhattan. The winged hilt of an angel's sword. A gift from Athuriel, she guessed, who had given her so many gifts. The image had rested in her mind until she needed it, the rune for shaping heaven's fire. That night on the demon plain, the blaze all around them had evaporated, drawn into the blade of Heosphoros, until the metal had burned and glowed and sung when she'd touched it, the sound of angelic choruses. The fire had left behind only a wide circle of sand, fused into glass, a substance that had glowed like the surface of the lake she had so often dreamed about, the frozen lake where Jace and Sebastian had battled to the death in her nightmares. This weapon could kill Sebastian, she had said. Jace had been more dubious, careful. He had tried to take it from her, but the light had died in it when he'd touched it. It reacted only to her, the one who had created it. She had agreed that they had to be cautious, in case it didn't work. It seemed the height of hubris to imagine she had trapped holy fire in a weapon, the way that fire had been trapped in the blade of Glorious. But the angel gave you this gift to create, Jason said. And do we not have his blood in our veins? Whatever the blade had sung with, it was now gone. Gone into her brother. Clary could hear Sebastian screaming, and over that, the cries of the Indarkened. A burning wind blew past her, carrying with it the tang of ancient deserts, of a place where miracles were common and the divine was manifest in fire. The noise stopped as suddenly as it had started. The dais shook under Clary as a weight collapsed onto it. She looked up and saw that the fire was gone, though the ground was scarred and both thrones looked blackened, the gold on them no longer bright, but charred and burned and melted. Sebastian lay a few feet from her, on his back. There was a great blackened hole across the front of his chest. He turned his head toward her, his face taut and white with pain, and her heart contracted. His eyes were green. The strength in her legs gave out. She collapsed onto the dais on her knees. "You," he whispered, and she stared at him in horrified fascination, unable to look away from what she had wrought. His face was utterly without color, like paper stretched over bone. She didn't dare to look down at his chest, where his jacket had fallen away. She could see the stain of blackness across his shirt, like a spill of acid. "You put the heavenly fire into the blade of the sword," he said. "It was cleverly done." "It was a rune, that's all," she said, kneeling over him, her eyes searching his. He looked different, not just his eyes, but the whole shape of his face. His jawline softer, his mouth without its cruel twist. "Sebastian, no, I'm not him. I'm Jonathan," he whispered. "I'm Jonathan."
"Go to Sebastian." It was Amatis, rising, with all the Indarkened behind her. There was grief on her face and rage. "Kill the girl!" Jonathan struggled to sit upright. "No!" he shouted hoarsely. "Get back!"
The dark shadow hunters, who had begun to surge forward, froze in confusion. Then pushing between them came Jocelyn. She shoved by Amatis without a look and dashed up the steps to the dais. She moved toward Sebastian, Jonathan, and then froze, standing over him, staring down with a look of amazement, mixed with a terrible horror.
"Mother,"
Jonathan said. He was staring, almost as if he couldn't quite focus his eyes on her. He began to cough. Blood ran from his mouth. His breath rattled in his lungs.
"I dream sometimes of a boy with green eyes. A boy who is never poisoned with demon blood. A boy who can laugh and love and be human. And that is the boy I wept over. But that boy never existed."
Jocelyn's face hardened, as if she were steeling herself to do something. She knelt down by Jonathan's head and drew him up into her lap. Clary stared. She didn't think she could have done it, could have brought herself to touch him like that. But then her mother had always blamed herself for Jonathan's existence. There was something in her determined expression that said that she had seen him into this world, and she would see him out. The moment he was propped up, Jonathan's breathing eased. There was bloody foam on his lips.
"I am sorry," he said with a gasp. "I am so..."
His eyes tracked to Clary.
"I know there is nothing I could do or say now that would allow me to die with even a shred of grace," he said. "And I would hardly blame you if you cut my throat. But I am... I regret. I'm... sorry."
Clary was speechless. What could she say?
"It's all right?"
But it wasn't all right. Nothing he had done was all right. Not in this world. Not to her. There were things you could not forgive.
And yet he had not done them. Not exactly.
This person, the boy her mother was holding as if it were her penance, was not Sebastian, who had tormented and murdered and wrought destruction. She remembered what Luke had said to her, what felt like years ago. "The Amatis that is serving Sebastian is no more my sister than the Jace who served Sebastian was the boy you loved. No more my sister than Sebastian is the son your mother ought to have had."
"Don't," he said, and half closed his eyes. "I see you trying to puzzle it out, my sister. Whether I ought to be forgiven the way Luke would forgive his sister if the infernal cup released her now. But you see, she was his sister once. She was human once. I..."
And he coughed, more blood appearing on his lips.
"I never existed at all. Heavenly fire burns away that which is evil. Jace survived glorious because he is good. There was enough of him left to live. But I was born to be all corruption. There is not enough left of me to survive. You see the ghost of someone who could have been. That is all."
Jocelyn was crying, tears falling silently down her face as she sat very still. Her back was straight.
"I must tell you," he whispered. "When I die, the Indarkin will rush at you. I won't be able to hold them back."
His gaze flicked to Clary.
"Where's Jace?"
"I'm here," Jace said. And he was, already up on the dais, his expression hard and puzzled and sad. Clary met his eyes. She knew how hard it must have been for him to play along with her, to let Sebastian think he had her, to let Clary risk herself at the last. And she knew how this must be for him. Jace, who had wanted revenge so badly, to look at Jonathan and realize that the part of Sebastian that could have been, should have been, punished, was gone. Here was another person, someone else entirely, someone who had never been given a chance to live, and now never would.
"Take my sword," said Jonathan, his breath coming in gasps now, indicating Phosphoros, which had fallen some feet away.
Cut it open."
"Cut what open?"
Jocelyn said in puzzlement, but Jace was already moving, bending to seize Phosphoros, flipping himself down from the dais. He strode across the room, past the huddled dark shadow hunters, past the ring of runes, to where the behemoth demon lay dead in its ichor.
"What is he doing?" Clary asked.
Though as Jace raised the sword and sliced cleanly down into the demon's body, it seemed obvious.
"How did he know?"
"He knows me,"
Jonathan breathed.
A tide of stinking demon guts poured across the floor. Jace's expression twisted with disgust, and then surprise, and then realization. He bent down and with his bare hand picked up something lumpy, glistening with ichor. He held it up, and Clary recognized the infernal cup. She looked over at Jonathan. His eyes were rolling back, shudders racking his body.
"Tell him," he stuttered. "Tell him to throw it into the ring of runes."
Clary lifted her head.
"Throw it into the circle,"
she cried to Jace, and Amatis whipped around.
"No," she cried. "If the cup is ruined, so shall we all be." She spun toward the dais. "Lord Sebastian, do not let your army be destroyed. We are loyal."
Jace looked at Luke. Luke was gazing at his sister with an expression of ultimate sadness. A sadness as profound as death. Luke had lost his sister forever, and Clary had only just gotten back her brother. The brother who had been gone from her all her life. And still, it was death on both sides. Jonathan, half supported against Jocelyn's shoulder, looked at Amatis. His green eyes were like lights.
"I'm sorry," he said. "I should never have made you."
And he turned his face away. Luke nodded, once at Jace. And Jace flung the cup as hard as he could into the circle of runes. It struck the ground and shattered into pieces. Amatis gasped and put her hand to her chest. For a moment, just a moment, she stared at Luke with a look of recognition in her eyes. A look of recognition. Even love.
"Amatis," he whispered.
Her body slumped to the ground. The other Indarkand followed, one by one, collapsing where they stood, until the room was full of corpses. Luke turned away, too much pain in his eyes for Clary to be able to bear to look at him. She heard a cry, distant and harsh, and wondered for a moment if it was Luke, or even one of the others, horrified to see so many Nephilim fall. But the cry rose and rose and became a great shrieking howl that rattled the glass and swirled the dust outside the window that looked out on Edom. The sky turned a red, the color of blood, and the cry went on, fading now, a gasping exhalation of sorrow, as if the universe were weeping.
"Lilith," Jonathan whispered. "She weeps for her dead children, the children of her blood. She weeps for them, and for me."
Emma pulled Cortana free of the body of the dead fairy warrior, heedless of the blood that slicked her hands. Her only thought was to get to Julian. She had seen the terrible look on his face as he'd slid to the ground. And if Julian was broken, then the whole world was broken and nothing would be right again. The crowd was spinning around her. She barely saw them as she pushed through the melee toward the Blackthorns. Drew was huddled against the pillar beside Jules, her body curled protectively around Tavi. Livia was still holding Ty by the wrist, but now she was staring past him, her mouth open. And Jules was still slumped against the pillar, but he had begun to raise his head, and as Emma realized that he was staring, she turned to see what he was looking at. All around the room, the Indarkand had begun to crumple. They fell like toppling chess pieces, silent and without crying out. They fell locked in battle with Nephilim, and their fairy brethren turned to stare as one by one the Indarkand warriors' bodies dropped to the floor. A harsh shout of victory rose from a few Shadowhunter throats, but Emma barely heard it. She stumbled toward Julian and went down on her knees beside him. He looked at her, his blue-green eyes wretched. "Em," he said hoarsely. "I thought that fairy was going to kill you, I thought." "I'm fine," she whispered. "Are you?" He shook his head. "I killed him," he said. "I killed my father." "That wasn't your father." Her throat was too dry to speak anymore. Instead, she reached out and drew on the back of his hand. Not a word, but a sigil. The rune for bravery. and after it, a lopsided heart. He shook his head as if to say, "No, no, I don't deserve that." But she drew it again, and then leaned into him, even covered in blood as she was, and put her head on his shoulder. The fairies were fleeing the hall, abandoning their weapons as they went. More and more Nephilim were flooding into the hall from the square outside. Emma saw Helen heading toward them, Aline beside her, and for the first time since they had left the Penhallows, Emma let herself believe that they might survive. "They're dead," Clary said, looking around the room in wonder at the remains of Sebastian's army. "They're all dead." Jonathan gave a half-choking laugh. "Some good I mean to do, despite of my own nature," he murmured, and Clary recognized the quote from English class. King Lear. The most tragic of all the tragedies. That was something. The Dark Ones are gone. Clary leaned over him, urgency in her voice. "Jonathan," she said, "please, tell us how to open the border, how to get home. There must be some way."
There's no way," Jonathan whispered. "I shattered the gateway. The path to the Seelie Court is closed. All paths are. It's impossible."
His chest heaved.
"I'm sorry."
Clary said nothing. She could taste only bitterness in her mouth. She had risked herself, had saved the world, but everyone she loved would die. For a moment, her heart swelled with hatred.
"Good," Jonathan said, his eyes on her face. "Hate me. Rejoice when I die. The last thing I would want would be to bring you more grief."
Clary looked at her mother. Jocelyn was still and upright, her tears falling silently. Clary took a deep breath. She remembered a square in Paris, facing Sebastian across a small table, him saying,
"Do you think you can forgive me? I mean, do you think forgiveness is possible for someone like me? What would have happened if Valentine had brought you up along with me? Would you have loved me?"
"I don't hate you," she said finally. "I hate Sebastian. I don't know you." Jonathan's eyes fluttered closed.
"I dreamed of a green place once," he whispered. "A manor house and a little girl with red hair and preparations for a wedding. If there are other worlds, then maybe there is one where I was a good brother and a good son."
Maybe, Clary thought, and ached for that world for a moment, for her mother and for herself. She was aware of Luke standing by the dais, watching them, aware that there were tears on Luke's face. Jace, the Lightwoods, and Magnus were standing well back, and Alec had his hand in Isabel's. All around them lay the dead bodies of endarkened warriors.
"I didn't think you could dream," said Clary, and she took a deep breath.
"Valentine filled your veins with poison, and then he raised you to hate. You never had a choice. But the sword burned away all that. Maybe this is who you really are." He took a ragged, impossible breath.
"That would be a beautiful lie to believe," he said, and incredibly, the ghost of a smile, bitter and sweet, passed over his face. "The fire of Glorious burned away the demon's blood. All my life it has scorched my veins and cut at my heart like blades and weighed me down like lead. All my life, and I never knew it. I never knew the difference. I've never felt so light," he said softly. And then he smiled and closed his eyes and died.
Clary rose slowly to her feet. She looked down. Her mother was kneeling, holding Jonathan's body sprawled across her lap.
"Mom," Clary whispered, but Jocelyn didn't look up.
A moment later, someone brushed by Clary. It was Luke. He gave her hand a squeeze, then knelt down beside Jocelyn, his hand gentle on her shoulder. Clary turned away. She couldn't bear it anymore. The sadness felt like a crushing weight. She heard Jonathan's voice in her head as she descended the stairs.
"I've never felt so light."
She moved forward through the corpses and ichor on the floor, numb and heavy, with the knowledge of her failure. After everything she had done, there was still no way to save them. They were waiting for her. Jace and Simon and Isabel and Alec and Max